Today, I am interviewing Dr. Cassandra McKay, who is a fertility acupuncturist and Chinese herbal medicine practitioner. Cass and I have actually been lecturers for the past 5 years together at one of Australia's leading colleges in natural medicine, where we've actually been clinic supervisors together. And Cass has always had such a wealth of knowledge in the area of gynecology and obstetrics. So I'm so happy for her to come on and have a chat today and share her knowledge. Cass has been a lecturer for more than 10 years and a Chinese herbalist and acupuncturist with nearly 20 years experience in the field. Her special interests are women's health and gynecology. For the past 10 years, she has been running Gold Coast Fertility Acupuncture, which is a practice that's dedicated exclusive to fertility and antenatal care. Cass is well-versed in reproductive health and conditions that impact fertility, ART, IVF protocols, pregnancy care, and postpartum well-being. With a background in biomedicine and education, Cass combines modern research and technologies with the older, more traditional Chinese viewpoints of health and holism, believing that best results are achieved when there is an integrative approach to care. So let's dive in and chat fertility with Cassandra McKay. A space for conversation around women's health through the lens of naturopathic and Eastern medicine. I am Sandy Ross, and this is Her Earth Medicine Podcast. This podcast is multi-leveled. Episodes for patient education to graduate practitioner level. Thank you for tuning in, and I hope you gain value from this episode. Welcome to the Her Earth Medicine Podcast, Dr. Sandra McKay.
Hello.
They can't see you smiling.
Oh, I am smiling.
Thanks for joining us, Cass. So Cass is actually a former lecturer at the college I've been working at, and she's an amazing fertility acupuncturist. So today we're going to be chatting all about IVF and fertility acupuncture and TCM. So before we dive into all that, do you want to tell us, Cass, how you became a fertility acupuncturist and just walk us through your journey?
When I finished school, I did a biomed degree and I always wanted to be a doctor, and all my friends went on and I took a year off and they were all very stressed and very anxious, and I probably had a little bit of a chance to reflect on, I guess, what kind of life I wanted to live. And so I had always wanted to be a naturopath, surprisingly. In high school, when we were finishing up, we were like, yep, sweet, you had to do a degree before you could do medicine. So I wanted to do naturopathy, and pretty much mum and dad said no to that one because you had to move to Lismore. I was in Toowoomba and that was a bad idea. So I changed my tact and called the naturopathic college, and they were terribly rude to me. And I went, right, well, I'll go Chinese medicine, knowing that they also did the herbs. And got accepted, and for the first year I hated Chinese medicine. I thought it was very confusing and very non-biomed, and pretty much nearly dropped out within that first 12 months because I really struggled to get my head around the concepts. And I had the most beautiful lecturers who convinced me to have a little bit of faith. And as you can imagine, coming from a biomed degree, faith was not something that I placed much stock in when it came to helping people heal. And I changed a bit of my perspective and attitude, and things clicked into place, and I could see the amazing benefits and the results you could get. And so was all up for it. After I graduated, I went to China, worked in the hospitals in China for 6 months, and amazing. Like, the gynecology ward was just, they treated everything with TCM. Very rarely did they use the Western medical approach. And I think from there, I just went, oh my God, like, it is so easy. It's so effective. And then pretty much once I graduated from left the hospital, I did different apprenticeships all around the world with fertility practitioners, and the results just spoke for themselves. And I couldn't get my head around how good, I guess, the Chinese medicine was. And so I came back, started practicing, and I went, I really want to pass on what I know. And so I went back to uni and did a grad dept in education so I could lecture. And pretty much since then, I've been lecturing and treating together.
Okay. How many years is that?
Oh, what, in terms of degrees?
Or just everything. How long have you been doing it? I know it's been a while.
About 20 years. 20 years in the TCM field, yeah.
Okay, awesome. All right, I certainly know that you've brought so much knowledge to so many students that I've spoken to and that you treat a lot of the students. They come to you for treatments and you've helped so many of them along the path and thousands of women. So I feel like this is going to be a great little lesson for guys to tune into and just kind of get some updates on what's happening around the fertility world with Chinese medicine. So maybe before we go into the IVF side of things, or, you know, we can relate it around that. Let's just kind of start with, when is ideal to get someone in? So someone's having problems with fertility, you know, it's been 12 months. Where do you want to see them? When do you want to see them?
Well, we're all the same. We all like that 3 month lead up to an ideal pregnancy. It takes 3 months for sort of the immature sperm to get sort of to the point where it's ejaculated and released, and it's the same for the eggs and the growth of eggs in the ovaries. It takes about 3 months to go from that real immature sort of follicle up to the dominant follicle to be released at ovulation. So 3 months is pretty much everyone's go-to number for the preconception.
Okay. So let's say someone's come in to see you for 3 months and they might have, you know, an array of different things going on. Are you using like weekly acupuncture, herbal medicine? What kind of treatments are you using for your intervention?
It does depend, and it does depend on the client. Some clients aren't keen on the herbs, and that's fine. Some clients aren't keen on the acu. And so you work with, one, what they're actually willing to take. There's no point in prescribing something that they're not going to do. So a lot of the time, if there is, let's say, you know, inverted brackets, nothing wrong with a client, they just haven't fallen pregnant yet, that 3 months of weekly acu with some herbs, they should fall pregnant within that time frame. Like it's usually just a matter of tweaking what's sort of off, and whether that's a hormonal imbalance or whether that's some of that stress or anxiety or some of the little underlying things, you will find that, you know, that's all it needs. I mean, I've had plenty of clients where you just do two treatments over ovulation and bang, they're pregnant the next cycle, but that's not necessarily the norm. If, however, you have a client with underlying endometriosis or PCOS or a combination of both or adenomyosis, anything along those lines, some of that changes and that's not the standard protocol. Then you might have to look at a range of different treatments to do, and some of that might be twice weekly, especially if they're not ovulating. And so you have to adapt it to the patient. But the general rule of thumb is once weekly, 12 treatments in the lead up to pregnancy, ideally.
Okay, and what kind of medical tests are you using in that 3 month kind of protocol prior to IVF, and what are they meaning to you from a TCM perspective?
Okay, well, probably from a biomed perspective, I look at it a bit differently. Like, okay. If I've had clients who go, well, I've been trying for 2 years and I'm still not pregnant, I'm here to see you because, you know, you're going to get me pregnant. I'm like, okay, well, what have we had checked? What have we had done? And so my first sort of go-to rule of thumb is I like to know that you have maybe had a high COSI, so high cosalpingeal test. Pretty much for the females, what they will do is they will, you know, put dye or water through the fallopian tubes to make sure that they are patent and unblocked. You cannot get a patient pregnant if she's got two blocked fallopian tubes. And so it costs about $400. Not every ultrasound place will actually do it, but sometimes it gives you a really good idea as to, one, if we are ovulating normally, that we can actually get pregnant. Mm. And if it does come back that there's an issue with the fallopian tubes, things aren't getting through, then we start to look at maybe there's an underlying endometriosis aspect, or maybe there's some of these factors that might be accounting for why you have fallen pregnant. So I do like the HOCOS. I do like AMH, anti-Müllerian hormone. Now, AMH is something that's banded around quite a fair bit in fertility circles, and it's one of those things where it isn't actually a test of fertility, so it won't give me those kind of answers, but it's a test of egg quantity. And so as you age, your egg numbers tend to go down. And when you kind of look at some of the stats and the figures on that, you get an idea of where your client should be according to their age level and how quickly they may fall pregnant. So someone with an AMH of 2, if they haven't fallen pregnant since they've been trying, they've only been trying for 6 months, then you kind of go, well, that's actually probably normal. I'm not looking for underlying pathology because that's probably within the normal realms. However, someone with an AMH of, say, you know, 25, 26, when they're in their late 30s and you're like, oh, sweet, this is actually going to go a lot faster than we probably thought, so this is really good. And AMH in your 50s tends to indicate PCOS, so we can also get some of those ideas on underlying Western bed pathologies with that. Sperm test is the one that we recommend for the guys because that gives us a lot of TCM idea of what could be going on there. And even just last week, I had a client who, she was seeing me religiously for the last couple of months, and I've been telling her, can we get the sperm checked? Like, it's really important. We don't know what we're working with here. 50% of infertility is females, 50% of males. And she finally went and got it done, and he has zero sperm. So you sit there and go, she's done a lot of this work. She's paid a lot of money to come and see me, and at the end of the day, the reason she's not pregnant is because he has no sperm.
So what are you doing with the males in that particular circumstance? Because sometimes they don't have the time or the flexibility or the commitment, I guess, to even come in for weekly acupuncture treatments. Are they sent home with a herbal or do you try and get them into the clinic?
Yeah. Well, we do try and get them into the clinic because obviously a lot of guys deal with high stress, you know, big jobs, big expectations, and so we want to address some of that and some of the dietary guidelines too. On the herbal side, there's a lot of research out there on high-dose antioxidant protocols, and you probably know this better than me, Sandy, being a naturopath, but we're looking at high levels of ubiquinol, CoQ10, vitamin C, vitamin E, like C, things like that, selenium, that can really do wonders for the sperm parameters. And then we do have a lot of different herbal formulas that we can use for guys, and it's not a lot of the research. Well, a lot of students probably think that it's all kidney yang tonics because that's going to work. But you still have to go through basic pattern diagnoses to see, is there damp there? Is there a lot of heat? Is there a lot of sort of qi stag that we need to work through? And you can get that from your sperm parameters. So it's really helpful.
Do you reckon you could give us a couple of your main sperm formulas that you use? Because I think there would be a few that get commonly used, say just like whether it's low sperm count, low motility, mobility.
Oh, see, I don't think you can do it that way. I think there's more to it than just...
Too traditional.
The wet, like, it has to be pattern-based.
Yeah.
So there's a few really big formulas that I swear to God are every single kidney yang tonic in existence. And you just kind of sit there and go, if there's a guy out there who's got liver cheese dag with heat and you just throw all of these yang tonics on him, that's not going to help. So I do think it has to come back to, like, I think the naturopathic stuff is a little bit more straightforward with the research. The Chinese med stuff changes it.
Yeah, because that is the thing, you know, tribulus can go to everyone from a naturopathic perspective. Yeah. But that's why TCM works a little bit better, I think, sometimes, because it is so much more individualised.
To a certain extent, I like working with Nats, though. I like, the more I pick up with Nats, the more I go, oh, that's really interesting. Why are we doing it that way? And you sit there and go, oh, if you can develop a relationship with a naturopath, you go, oh, actually, can we maybe swap this one for something along the lines that has a more neutral kind of temperature and you can get the Nats on board, then it's gold. Because you've got a lot of options too. I think the two work really well together.
Yeah, definitely. And that is the beauty of it, integrating the two modalities. That takes you to the next level with the treatment. Okay, so let's say it's been 3 months. Actually, no, let's just say someone's coming to see you a week or let's say 2 weeks before they're going in for their IVF. And I know this happens. They've been given your referral from the fertility doctor and now they want to be treated. Where do you start with them? What do you do?
Well, that changes things because we haven't had the lead up. And this is, I think, where a lot of your fertility clients don't understand the research. And so they come in and go, oh, I've heard acupuncture is really going to help me fall pregnant. And you're like, hopefully, like, yes. But you're kind of like, the way that the research indicates that we do the best results is dose dependent. So the more acupuncture you get over a time frame, the better it is. And so for those clients who haven't done our preconception kind of work and haven't done some of the, even the naturopathic work or the nutritional work, and they're just going, right, I'm doing this at the end of my cycle, I'm just going to log it in, then you up the protocols and you do start to treat a little bit more. Because if you imagine someone who's got, you know, massively painful periods and have done so for the last, you know, 15, 20 years, and then you're like, there's so much blood stag here, there's so much qi stag, like we really need to try and shift and move this, then some of these clients might see me 2 or 3 times a week in the lead up to egg collection, And then even then, we're still trying to make sure that we're sending the blood into, like, the uterus and the ovaries. Women who have thin endometrial linings are really tricky, though, because... Okay, so I'll back up a sec. So with IVF protocols, endometrial lining is really important. It's not just how many eggs that they are collecting on a medicated egg collection cycle, but it's their lining. If they have an endometrial lining that's less, and some of them will change, but less than about 7, they won't go ahead with an embryo transfer because there's not enough blood effectively for the embryo to implant into. And so with those women, with the blood deficiency women on that one, they actually really do need a longer, you know, lead up to the IVF. And some of these clients, they will have cancelled embryo transfers and they'll sit there and go, right, what do we need to do? You'd be like, bone broths. You need to smash those bone broths. You need to smash some of these blood-building formulas. You need to, you know, blackstrap molasses. We need all of the purple, red foods that we could possibly imagine to throw into that and really go hardcore. And, I mean, they're fairly intense protocols at that point in time, but it's really needed. And TCM does particularly well with being able to build to the lining, more so, I think, than any other profession. Did I answer that question?
Yep. Well, I can't even remember what I asked you. I think it was depending on what's happening, if they've come in the 10 days prior to the IVF. And then you, you first started, I think, talking about, was it how many eggs they got? And then we moved on to the lining. Two postnatal baby brain practitioners chatting here. They haven't eaten. So, yeah, let's move it back. So egg quality, obviously, like, you know, if they get a few eggs and whatnot, and that all goes well. And a lot of the time now I know they're using, like, frozen cycles, so that can be beneficial because then you've got that little bit of an extra gap.
Frozen embryo transfers actually have a higher rate of implantation than the fresh embryo transfers, and it's kind of mind-boggling to sit there and go, how is something that has been frozen and then defrosted actually got a higher statistical success rate than fresh? And no one really has an answer for that. It seems bizarre.
I mean, it might have something to do with the ability to heal between you know, having everything inflated and prodded and whatnot and all the hormones and the stimulation and then allowing that to calm down. Yeah. And that's a good thing. Like if someone has come to you that kind of week or two prior to their IVF egg retrieval and then they're doing a frozen cycle, then they might be with you for a little bit before obviously having their transfer. Can you walk us through some of the research around the protocols with the transfers though? Because I know things have changed a little bit over the years. So pre and post transfer, people want to do the, you know, they go and Google it. It says the timing and they need to come into the clinic at this time. And then let's just say they haven't seen you prior and they're just calling you for the pre and post transfer. Yeah. Can you walk us through how you do that and even the most research points for that?
Okay, so when you look at it, that goes back to 2000. Was the Paulus protocol. Okay, so he's using basically all of the points that are sending the blood to the uterus. We're talking like your spleen sixes, your spleen tens, your stomach 36, anything on the abdomen. These kind of points they were looking at in with the theory that in all of the lead up to egg collection, the more blood that we can send into the ovaries and into the uterus means that we've got more oxygenation, means that we've got more nutrient supply going into these areas. And so, therefore, we've got a greater uptake on these developing ovaries and endometriums. But you kind of look and sort of the research over a few years, it goes from like 2002 up to about 2005, kind of has conflicting results. And you sort of sit there and go, hang on, what am I supposed to do? And they all basically say sending the blood supply into the uterus before egg collection is adamant. Like you have to. Like that's what we want. We want the mitochondrial cells on the eggs to really have access to as much ADP and as much energy and nutrients as they possibly can have, because it's these particular eggs and the mitochondria on the female eggs in particular that when we have fertilization implantation, these are the guys that are actually facilitating implantation in the endometrium. So that's what we really focus on in those 2 weeks in the lead up to your egg collection. The research though then shows that once you have transfer or once implantation is happening, that happens in a non-oxygenated environment. So if you are using all of these points that are sending blood flow into the uterus, there can actually be negative consequences of that. And that was Westergaard. I think she was like 2006. And that research actually had detrimental effects to some of the implantation that was happening. And I was like, what's going on? What's going on? And that's where they realised that Paulus's protocol, it's time dependent. Paulus's protocol happened in an IVF clinic where the patient would, or client would, go in and have this particular allocation of points. First, they would have the acupuncture, they would go straight away to have the embryo transfer, and then they would come back immediately to have the post-embryo transfer treatment. So all of this happened within like about a 40-minute time frame, two acupuncture sessions and the transfer. So you kind of sit here and go, hang on, we really need to assess what's going on here. And they realise that doing these points that are increasing blood supply into the uterus after a time frame is actually probably not best practice for a patient. So unless you're an acupuncturist within the immediate vicinity, like basically within the IVF clinic itself, you shouldn't do Paulus's protocol. And this is where a lot of practitioners probably change this to a certain extent and gone, we will do this pre-embryo transfer a couple of days beforehand or a day beforehand and still really send the blood supply into the uterus at this point, really build that up. But then the post-embryo transfer tends to be one that's going to calm the nervous system down and balance out the parasympathetic and sympathetic system. And for that, you're using a lot of like your low points and stuff like that, really gentle, gentle, gentle. And so some of that changes, and it's really difficult to tell with practitioners the pre and post-embryo transfers, what are they doing in those transfers? Because a lot of them are not necessarily following the Paulus protocol anymore. So the general rule of thumb is that if you can't have a client back to your clinic within probably, well, having needles in them within an hour, then you probably should do Paulus protocol for the post-embryo transfer.
Okay. And then so when do you recommend around their transfer protocols to come in?
I tend to, once I've got egg collection, I tend to wait until day three, day four post-egg collection because, yeah, the way IVF works is it's kind of tricky. You'll get, when you go in for the egg collection, you'll get a number written on your hand, and that will tell you when you come out of general anaesthetic how many eggs you had collected. And then we have how many eggs actually get fertilised. And then we have like a day two update, a day three update, a day four update as to how our embryos are tracking. And so for IVF, the ideal is a five-day blastocyst, so an embryo that's reached 5 days post-collection. And so I tend to wait for day three, day four to do another cycle or like another treatment for increasing the blood supply into the uterus and calming them down. And that tends to work quite well because there can be quite high die-off rates with your embryos, and some of your clients don't have the money to do an extra treatment if it's unnecessary. And by all means, it can be unnecessary. They can end up with no blastocyst at the end of it. So you have a better idea by day three, day four, what's going on. And then I will do a post-embryo transfer treatment, but that is, as I said, calming the sham, calming the nervous system, and just letting them relax into the next two-week wait.
And when are you trying to get them in for that one?
Not for the two-week wait. I will, if they're really suffering from anxiety and stress, I'll do a treatment for that. But a lot of the research shows that treatments in the luteal phase aren't necessarily good for fertility.
Okay, great. Now, what about herbal medicine? Where does this all fit into IVF protocols? Do you want to go into that?
I don't tend to do herbs with clients in a standard IVF protocol, in that these clients are paying anywhere from $10,000 plus in your private clinics, and they are being medicated up to the eyeballs. So they've got their follicle stimulating sort of stuff, they've got their triggers, like they're hormone overload. And so I sit there and go, my best work is done prior to this. I will use the ACU during this to offset side effects of the mental, emotional, psychological factors, to the bloating, to the fluid retention, to that sort of stuff. So I, for a standard kind of normal client, no go. I will, though, do a herbal formula once they've had transfer, once they've successfully had that 5 day and they're having their post-embryo transfer treatment. There's a herbal formula that we use a lot of, Shao Tai one, and it's got a particular herb in it, Tsusi. And Tsusi has got a lot of research on the ability to help halt. And all of these herbs in there, Yijiao, Songjishen, Tsusi, and Duzhong or Shuguan, these are all calm, the fetus herbs as well. And so they're particularly good from a Chinese medicine perspective for sort of calming that potential baby and allowing it to implant. And so that's also known to have no side effects with progesterone. In fact, it enhances the uptake of progesterone, and a lot of clients will have quite high progesterone levels when they're on that herb as well progesterone, PESRAs. Serious stress and psychological kind of factors going on, I may prescribe different herbs that will just help ease the mind going through the IVF cycle. I mean, things like even Metagenics, Neurocalm is really nice for some of the clients to be on, and they're not actively going to be playing havoc with the hormones that the IVF meds are sort of sorting out.
Yeah, and there's always things like magnesium and whatnot that you can put them on as well too. So, yeah, like you said, there's a lot of herbs that can be used that are coming for
the passion flower. Yeah.
Yeah, the ones that don't have any effect on the hormones. Very important, I think, because obviously I think every practitioner or student has Jane Littleton's book, which is very herb heavy too, so they can sometimes get a bit of confidence with going through that. But I think, yeah, like you said, like you're not even using them really. I don't really particularly use them besides a few nat herbs that are quite calming for the nervous system. So really good point there. So thank you for covering that.
Like I will deal with a client who's done like 15 IVF cycles and things aren't working out. They're like, what else can we do? And I kind of sit there and go, when we had that many cycles and things haven't worked well, then you start to get that mindset of going, right, let's throw this at it. Like, let's just see what we can do. But it's a different mindset to someone who's on their first or second or third IVF cycle.
Okay, great point there. And, yeah, also what happens usually if they're on their first or second and it doesn't work, they're going to be committed to come and see you to do the prep work prior to the next transfer. If you can, you know, obviously educate them on waiting a little bit so that you can maybe increase sperm quality, egg quality, all those sort of things. Is there anything else you want to mention on IVF in regards to, you know, the current research, anything that we haven't covered that you think would be really of good value for a student practitioner to tune into?
I think you probably... The biggest thing to pay attention to, well, honestly, for any of the fertility treatments, it's not just IVF, is that we as women have been promised a dream. We have been promised a dream that we are fertile creatures and this is a very natural process and it should be easy. Same with breastfeeding, it's got the same sort of issues. And when you are denied a promise that you kind of have been guaranteed since you were born, it's a huge psychological weight to bear. And so I think with all these women, you have to treat the shame. You have to. You have to include the heart because these women are breaking inside because they just can't fall pregnant and they're doing everything right and they don't know what to do to fix it. And you get those clients who go onto that real liver alpha kind of bandwagon of, I'll do everything you say, I'll do everything to the nth degree. And then the others who are just crumbling under the pressure of the anxiety. And so I think emotions have to be part of this. It just has to be, as well as the blood aspects. Like the blood's pretty huge too. So they're probably the two biggest things with fertility is blood and emotions because it's so important.
And the good thing about those two is diet and herbs can work a treat for that too, because I do find that with some women, and you can correct me because you do probably a lot more fertility than I do, but sometimes it can be really stressful for a patient to actually try and get in for their appointments, you know, consistently, whether it's twice a week or something like that. It can actually add a huge amount of stress. We are all busy. We don't have much time. So, you know, that's where prescribing outside of the clinic, you know, even things like Tai Chi or relaxation, as long as anything isn't causing them that extra stress, because otherwise it's on their to-do list and it's a part of what they have to do, even though it's supposed to help them de-stress.
Yeah, it's huge. It is huge, the burdens that are placed on trying to do everything. And you add that into, say, secondary infertility for someone who has already had a child but then can't fall pregnant with their second one. They have a toddler and they're like, who's going to look after this toddler while I can attend all of these appointments? Who's going to do this? Who's going to do that? And you kind of sit there and go, okay, what else have we got that is walks along the beach or things that you can take a toddler to that's not cost or labour intensive?
Okay, I wanted to ask you quickly, I don't know whether any naturopaths will tune into this, but just in case they are, or, you know, the students that are, you know, tossing between acu and naturopathy, herbs for fertility. So the common herbs that, you know, naturopaths might use in a tincture, so instead of using, you know, like, I don't know, a list of herbs like they do in TCM at a lower dose, nats are using much bigger dose of dongguan and peony and astragalus or Vitex, heaps of Vitex, and those sort of things.
Vitex is huge.
Yeah. Is there something you want to touch on in regards to maybe the energetics of some of the naturopathic herbs or even supplements that we use that, you know, from a TCM perspective should be known about?
I do think it's worthwhile to work with both a naturopath and a Chinese medicine practitioner because, as you said, there are certain herbs that we kind of go, ooh, that's really not maybe applicable for you. And as all my students would know, I have a massive issue with ginseng, some Siberian ginseng or Renshan for us in Chinese medicine, because it is significantly heating on the system. We in a TCM tend to replace ginseng Codenopsis because we go, for us in TCM, very similar effects without the heating burden of ginseng on top of it. So I find some of those clients who prescribe ginseng end up with what appears to be like a caffeine overload and they're kind of jittery and they're not quite dealing with it too well. And you're like, that's because of some of those herbs. So I think when you can have two practitioners kind of happily work together to substitute occasionally, then that can go a long way. Things like peony, dongguei, all the rest of them, they're very basic kind of like blood builders for us. And we're always really happy to have that throughout the cycle. Not too many of those do we get too concerned about, but it's probably some of the diagnoses are different between that and Chinese med. And I've touched on this numerous times before, but adrenal fatigue is a huge one for me that naturopaths diagnose, obviously. Like you're dealing with a lot of cortisol and adrenaline issues with the clients. And so you go, yeah, you're totally in adrenal fatigue. So for us in Chinese medicine, though, a lot of the patients that are fitting into that adrenal fatigue kind of category are what we would call yin shu with empty heat or deficient heat. And you add in those kind of adrenal fatigue naturopathic herbs and we all of a sudden in Chinese medicine going, oh my God, you're ruining my patient. We can't do this. We can't do this. And so we have to try and backtrack with some of that and go, oh, actually, that's not the best formula for you at this point in time. Like you're tired. You're seriously tired, but it's not because of the energy aspect. It's actually because of the fluid aspect. So we need to offset some of this with yin shu stuff. So that can be hard. That can be really tricky. And it's probably the adrenal fatigue stuff that's the biggest one for us in TCM, I think. Finding the right balance.
Yes, and there's a lot of ginseng and a lot of those adrenal formulas as well.
Yeah. Huge.
There are There are some companies that do take a bit of it, and you probably know, like if you've searched through, we won't name brands, but some of the formulas of the naturopathic side, they're quite Chinese-based. There's a company in particular that has quite a few. So I guess, if people are working with naturopaths, just get them to bring in their supplements and have a little browse over it because it can make a big difference. Like you said, if someone's on the ginseng with the heat, yes. So great point there. Anything else with supplements, things like the NAC or anything like that?
Yeah, so NAC is a big one. So if you're interested in understanding some of your supplements from both a TCM and naturopathic perspective, like I'm not trained in naturopathic stuff. I'm fascinated by it. I've worked for years with NACs, but I'm not an expert by any means in any of this. And so Claire Pyers does a lot of webinars and seminars on this sort of stuff. She also has a website where you can do some of the practitioner training for your CBD points. So I do highly recommend it. And she will go through different ones. Some of them go completely over my head. But things like NAC and acetylcysteine, they use quite a lot of in your fertility treatments, different naturopaths. And they use it for a range of different issues. But one of the things that they tend to do is to detox the hormones a little bit, yeah? Sandy?
Yeah, it depends on, yeah, it's so, yeah, it has a lot of roles. So that's why we use it so much because it's going to break down biofilm if you're doing gut. There's estrogen detoxification, so many things. That's why NAC's use it all the time.
Lots of stuff there and we kind of sit there and go, yes, I so see that it is particularly good for fertility, but it isn't actually great for your yin shu patients. It's really good for those who have any other pattern but yin shu and blood shu because that will actually make that worse. And so that's where having an understanding of some of this, you can educate your clients to a certain extent and go, we either need to maybe look at something else or we need to get off this well and truly in advance of your next IVF cycle. But then that's the same as some of your Western medications. If you look at something like Clomid. Clomid is known to really interfere with your endometrial lining. And so after 3 months of being on something like Clomid, we want you off because you're going to start to have obvious results with some of your linings with Clomid. I think that's the reason why they use a lot of letrozole these days. It doesn't seem to have the same effect as some of the Clomid clients. So I think having an understanding of the Western med herbs and the Western med pharmaceuticals and naturopathic supplements and herbs is actually really beneficial if you want to get into this particular area.
It's an integration between all the modalities, really. You do have to dip your toe into other areas and understand it. Can you tell us, where do you stay up to date? What's your what resources are you using to keep up to date in the fertility world? Who do you mentioned Claire Pyers. Who else are you following? Joan Littleton?
Yeah, I tend to, if you look at it's Healthy Seminars, and that's they offer a lot of CBD stuff. I've done pretty much all of their stuff on there. So I really like, obviously, Deborah Betts and Jane Littleton. I follow a lot of their stuff. Deborah Betts is mind-blowing with the research that she comes out with and how supportive she really is with the patient. So I like that sort of stuff. I really like Sarah Butt. I really like Claudia Sigovich. Sharon Weisenbaum can be a little bit tricky if you've got no concept of herbs. Her stuff's quite intense. But I probably like a lot of that sort of stuff. I don't do Japanese acupuncture, so I can't guide you on their stuff. And their stuff's different. They do a lot of flip treatments in there with their patients. Like when I have a client on the table, I do not flip them. My treatments are all face up on the table because I want to put points in Zigong and CB3, CB4. I really want to use them as directional points for the blood to flow to effectively. So there's different ways to practice and there's different ways to treat, and I tend to treat their way.
Yeah, okay. No, great point. And, you know, yeah, like you said, there's so many different styles out there, so there's some really good resources there. Is there anything else you want to mention that we haven't covered that you think is, you know, golden for anyone tuning in to gain value from, you know, whether it's regarding IVF, fertility, pregnancy, anything we haven't touched on?
Probably not. I haven't stopped talking, have I?
Says the lecturer of 10 years, 20 years. How many years was it? Okay.
Yeah. No, I've been lecturing for 10, but yeah, no, I can talk on the book.
Yeah, no, that's great. I think we've covered quite a bit. So if anyone wants to tune in and anyone wants to find you, I know you're on social media for Gold Coast Fertility Acupuncture. Is that correct?
Yep.
Where to
I tend not to put too much up. Obviously we have issues with APRA and what we can and can't say.
Yep.
So Instagram is my main one, and I do like to share lots of stories from other practitioners who have interesting reads or good research up there. I'll try and sort of put that up in my my feeds. But, yeah, my sort of stuff is a little bit more basic, but I'm there.
Yep. And where to next for you, Cass?
I'm really looking at – I've just joined her medical there at Southport, which is multimodality GPs, physios, nutritionists, naturopaths. So I really am looking forward to being able to work on that level again. I've worked by myself for quite a few years now.
Yeah,
so I feel as though
isolating.
I integrate a bit more and, you know, work that allied health a little bit more, because I think it's really important to refer your clients out. Like as TCM, yeah, we're good. We're really good. But – we're not to the exclusion of everyone else. And so I want to be back in with others going, oh, hey, so that client, so she's got this, this and this. What would you recommend? And, yeah, I'll send her in to see you because I think that you can definitely help her. So I want to get to that level for a bit. I still have three little children, so I can't do too much. Once they're a bit older, then I might be able to branch out a bit, Sandy.
Yes.
You know the feeling?
I know it, yeah. You're superwoman. You juggle a lot. Take a breath. Okay, great. And if anyone wants to reach out to you, can we give them an email or a website or something like that? You don't have to give an email. Websites is plenty.
Gold Coast Fertility Acupuncture. I'm currently trying to get gcfa.com.au set up as well, because apparently no one can spell acupuncture. Acupuncture apparently has two C's for most people. So just trying to shorten that down a little bit and working on some of that. But I do a lot of mentoring for new graduates. So I've had three this morning that I've emailed off, where they're like, I've got this client with endo, I've got a client with PCOS, what do you recommend? And so as much as new graduates have a degree behind them, I find that the real life experience is vastly different. So for someone with PCOS, where you're then using electro, you know, on Zigong, on 2 hertz frequency, twice a week, things like that, like I don't know if they've all been necessarily really aware of sort of some of the treatment ways. So I get a lot of emails and I'm more than happy to help if I can. I don't always know, but I'll try and direct them in the right areas if I can.
Okay, great. So available for mentoring at a cost. Not free. Well, I have to say it. All right, Cass. Well, thank you so much for joining us. You've given us so much knowledge. So, yeah, thank you for taking the time out and tuning in and sharing your knowledge.
Wonderful, my pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you for listening. I have been a practitioner of naturopathic and Chinese medicine for over a decade. I have a master's degree of health science and I am an academic lecturer at Australia's leading natural medicine college. I am available worldwide online for bookings. Simply go to sandyrosshealth.com.